STR podcasts are made possible through the generous donations of our listeners. To support STR today, go to str.org and click on Donate in the upper right-hand corner.
This is Brett Kunkel, and you're listening to the Bulletproof Podcast. Well, welcome back to me. I've been on a 6-month podcast hiatus. And I've heard from some of you, hey, when's your next podcast? Here it is. I'm back. It's a new year, 2014. I'm in a new location. Actually, you might hear a lot of noise in the background. You might hear an echo. You may hear cars driving by. You may hear voices of people walking by. I just recently moved into a new home here in Southern California, and I am in my office, which is a room attached to my garage, which is basically a shell of a room right now. A lot of work has to be done on this to make it into an office, so it's not insulated, it's not sealed. You can hear all the noises from outside. So this is kind of bulletproof raw, or bulletproof uncut. So that's where we're broadcasting from. Actually, I guess we're not broadcasting. I'm just recording. But so I'm in my my office attached to my garage here, looking at a new year before us, 2014, and I am making a commitment to you and to myself that I am going to start podcasting more regularly. In fact, my goal is to on average podcast once a week, and I'm committed to equipping parents, youth leaders and pastors, church leaders, Sunday school teachers, Christian educators of all stripes, those of you who have an influence on young people, I am committed to helping equip you in doing this. And I've got a little bit of experience in this. Spent 11 years in local church ministry as a youth pastor, 7 years in California, Southern California, 4 years in Colorado. I've been with Stand to Reason for 11 years now, or almost 11 years, I think. I started in 2003 as a student impact director. Plus, I have 5 kids of my own. I've got a 19-year-old who's in college, a 12-year-old boy, a 10-year-old girl, a 6-year-old girl, and a 2-year-old boy. So I have really every level of development in my own home. And so from my own experience, from my mistakes, from my successes, I want to really equip parents and leaders out there to disciple your young people, to ground them in the truth of Christianity, and ultimately to get them fired up and passionate for Christ and for his mission in this world. So it's a new year, a new commitment. And you got permission to get on my case if I miss a week here. So, all right. So introductions are over. Let's get to it. For those of you who have listened to the podcast before, you know I've talked about a 4-step strategy. It's a strategy I used as a youth pastor. It's one that I use as a parent. There are really kind of 4 steps in really trying to get more serious and very practical about training our young people and discipling our young people. And those 4 steps were, number 1, elevate your expectations. Our young people are capable of so much more than we often expect from them, particularly when it comes to spiritual things. We may have high expectations for their athletics, right? We send them to camps, and we'll pay for, you know, additional training, or they'll do additional practice. We have high expectations for those kind of things. We have high expectations for their academic success, and we'll invest the necessary resources and money and time. But oftentimes when it comes to their spiritual training, our expectations are low. So the first step is, it starts with us in raising the bar of expectations. Secondly, we need to equip, and specifically equip their minds. I want parents and youth leaders to go after the minds of their young people and ground them in deep theology, deep philosophy, deep apologetics, deep worldview training, all of these things. And of course, that does start with number one, elevating your expectations. What can they handle? And so then equip their mind is step two. Step three is engage them in experiences. Get the teaching and the training out of the classroom and into real life. And number four is then embody all of this yourself. Embody the truth. Of course, our young people need to see this model. They need to see it lived out in our lives. And so that's kind of my four-step strategy. This is what I use with my own kids as I train them and I disciple them. And on this podcast, I want to focus on that third step. I want to focus on engaging them in experiences. And I recently got the chance to sit down with a group of students from a church here in Southern California. These kids were raised in the church. They're regulars at their youth group. Each one of them claimed to be, you know, to have a relationship with Christ. And I got to sit down at a table with these students and really have some close interaction with them. And I got to say that the group was characterized by this kind of deadness. As I tried to engage them, they seemed pretty unmoved, uninterested. They were just kind of dead and passionless as we were talking about spiritual things. Now, sadly, I'm not surprised. I wasn't surprised then. I'm not surprised anymore when I encounter this kind of passionless faith of young people. As I work with churches and groups around the country, I find all kinds of students, Christian students, who are completely apathetic towards spiritual things. They talk about having a relationship with Christ, but it's passionless. You know, talk of God is like boring. Now, why is this the case? I mean, when we talk about relationship with Christ, we probably have an expectation that this, I mean, as a Christian, this is kind of the most exciting adventure we can be on. Relationship with Christ is life's most exciting adventure. Right? I mean, it should be full of drama. It should be full of passion and excitement. Now, I'm not suggesting the Christian life is one big emotional high, but why do we have young people who fill our churches who are more willing to plug into their iPods than plug into the scriptures? Right? They'd much rather read, Us Weekly or, you know, People Magazine or some, you know, computer magazine or whatever it might be, than their Bibles. Why are they more excited about the latest celebrity gossip than the gospel? Why aren't their lives filled with the drama of God's kingdom? Now, some of you might be thinking, this doesn't just describe our young people. It describes our adults as well. And sadly, I think that's true. But I'm going to focus on young people. And I think a big part of the problem is that our students, those in our homes and in our churches and in our Christian schools, rarely engage their world for the cause of Christ. Here's what I've observed in my training through the years, over 20 years now of working with young people. The most exciting events that I do, that I get to participate in, that I lead and direct, those are the events where students seem to come to life. Those events have some component of engagement, where we're somehow getting out of the classroom and into real life. Now, let me illustrate. For about 10 years now, I've been taking students on mission trips to Berkeley and Utah through my work at Stand to Reason. Now, for me, this actually started when I was an undergrad at Biola University. I went on a Utah mission trip that had a tremendous impact on my life. I was challenged like never before. I studied like never before. And then we took this into real-life conversations with with Mormons in Utah. And so I grew like never before in my knowledge of theology and my knowledge of God. And then it all came to life. All that classroom training and teaching, all that reading came to life when we actually went to Utah and went door to door around BYU, or talked to students at BYU's campus, or, you know, engaged missionaries in Temple Square. And so those trips started for me back as an undergrad. And then as a youth pastor, I did the Utah mission trip with my students, my high school and college students. And then when I joined Stand to Reason, I started incorporating this into my work. And then we not only did the Utah trip, but then I built the Berkeley trip at the prompting of my good friend Jay Warner Wallace. We built a Berkeley trip, and now we've been doing both of these trips. One's kind of a theological mission trip, and I kind of call the other one an apologetic mission trip, right? And so each one of the trips, we require hours of training. There's classroom instruction. There's videos that students watch. We require students to read books. They have to read at least one text. If they're going to Berkeley, we require that they read I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist, because I think that just lays out a very accessible cumulative case for Christianity. And so I want to give students kind of that big picture and help them to kind of see the cumulative case that we have, and that there's not just kind of one knockdown argument, one magic bullet. And there's also not one magic bullet that kind of destroys Christianity, but they get the cumulative case. And so that book is a good challenge, but it's accessible. It raises the bar for them. We raise the bar for them in our training. At Utah, we require them to read my little booklet on Mormonism, an ambassador's guide to Mormonism. That's available at str.org. And also we have them read Mormon Scrapbook by a friend of mine, Chip Thompson. Daniel Thompson. And so there's hours of training that they do, classroom instruction, reading required books, and all that training is important and necessary. You got to have that. But that's not, of course, what generates the most buzz among the students. Students get fired up when they're on these mission trips, when they get an opportunity to engage an unbelieving world with the truth. And so on these trips, when we're in Utah, we invite Mormon leaders out to speak to us. We've had Mormon speakers from FARMS, which is a Mormon apologetic organization. We've sat down with seminary professors, Mormon seminary professors. When we're on the Berkeley mission trip, we engage all kinds of people. We invite gay activists, skeptics and atheists. We've gone to a Unitarian church and engaged with the pastors there, even Hare Krishna priests. We just look for any kind of unbelievers that are willing to dialogue with the students. And so we give our non-Christian guests time to share their views, and then we followed up with a lot of Q&A and dialogue with the students. We want those students to engage, and it's during the Q&A when the students come to life. We'll get high school students who will just ask question after question. They'll engage our skeptical guests, and they'll deal with the arguments. And of course, at the conclusion of each encounter, we thank our guests, but then what we do is we spend time doing debrief. So then we'll spend an additional hour or so just kind of debriefing, narrating what just went on. What were the arguments, what were the main arguments this guy was making? What kind of evidence was he giving for his view? What was his view? All that stuff. And at this point, during the debrief, this is when we see students kind of a buzz. And this is when you kind of can't get the students to shut up. They ask question after question. And, you know, before you know it, an hour of discussing apologetics and theology with high school students will have just flown by. Another thing that we do on these trips is we go on to college campuses. So we'll go on to BYU's campus. We'll go on to UC Berkeley's campus. And we conduct surveys. And I've developed a couple of surveys. You can actually get them on our website at str.org. We've got two surveys for our Berkeley trip. We call them conversational surveys. We've got conversational survey number one and number two posted there. You can download the PDF. But the surveys are designed to get our students into conversations with non-Christian students about spiritual things. And the purpose of the survey is not to collect a bunch of data. It's simply a tool that allows us to kind of approach a stranger and then let that get us into just a normal conversation and to talk about, you know, spiritual things, about specific, significant matters. Now, our students, when we take them on to, you know, BYU or Berkeley's campus, at first they are fearful, they are anxious. I remember my first time, I was scared to death. Students are skeptical about people's willingness to engage them. They're skeptical that these perfect strangers are gonna want to talk about these kind of things. And so I kind of have to prompt the students and encourage them and just make them go out there. And they always go out in groups of, you know, two or three. They're never alone. But after an hour or two of these surveys, students return, and they're always pumped up. During the debrief time, because we debrief everything. So we debrief the encounters with the guests that we invite in. We debrief the surveys on campuses. And so during the debrief time, students, they just can't wait to share about their encounters. Again, they're abuzz. They're lit up. And they've had a significant conversation for maybe 30 minutes or maybe 45 minutes, maybe even an hour. Sometimes students will have conversations that will last like an hour and a half or 2 hours. And they'll sit on the campus of UC Berkeley in the grass somewhere or on a bench talking to a stranger they just met about God, about the scriptures, about an argument for God's existence, about skepticism, whatever it might be. And they just can't wait to share what they've just experienced. They're filled with excitement about their conversations on campuses with these non-Christians. They've engaged. And here's what we found. When we create these opportunities for students to engage, there is a vibrancy that infuses these trips and these kind of events. Now, this actually I don't think should come as a surprise. Christianity is not a spectator sport. Our teaching should not remain in the classroom. Our teaching should not simply remain behind the four walls of the church. But think about it. It seems like the majority of our teaching does. If you think about the activity in your typical local church, your church, my church, so much of it seems to happen behind those four walls. And I think we've got to get out of that mentality. We've got to get out of the classroom, out from behind the walls of the church, get this stuff into real life. And so if we want to train students who can defend the faith and know what they believe, are confident, and to do so intelligently, but also passionately, we need to get them in the game. Think about any sports team, right? Who are the most passionate players on the field? It's typically the starters. The bench warmers, not so much. They're not as engaged. But when you get in the game, off of the sidelines, and you're getting knocked around, you're getting the opportunity to make big plays. You're part of it. You're part of the game. You're more passionate about the game, right? And then you're actually also more motivated. So let's say you get your butt kicked in a football game, and you know what do you do? Well, hopefully that doesn't discourage you too much, but you go back to practice, and you go back to the playbook, and you do your study. And you practice harder, and you go to the weight room, and you work out, and you get yourself prepared for the next time that you're on the field. Now, I think this is one of the reasons why our mission trips to Berkeley and Utah are exciting, and why they're successful, and why there's a big demand for them. In fact, we had to shut down the first 6 or 7 months here. My plate was full with like 6 trips in just the first 6 or 7 months of this year. And so we had to say no to a couple groups, which is a bummer because these trips just have a way of firing up groups. And so we're telling them, hey, okay, you know, either schedule it for the second half of this year or we're going to have to look at 2015. But why are these, you know, why is there demand for this? Why are they successful? Why do I have groups that come back year after year after year to do these trips? In fact, what we found is almost all of the groups that we take on one of these trips they will end up scheduling the next trip. So if we take a group to Utah, the next year they're booking Berkeley or vice versa. And I think the key is that these trips get students off the sidelines and into the game. These students get an opportunity to engage a lost world with the truth of Jesus Christ. These students get to live out the mission of the gospel. They're not just talking about it, they're not just learning about it, but now they're getting to see the apologetic lived out, the apologetic played out in a real-life conversation. And students come back from these trips, not every single student, but the majority of them, I would say, come back lit up, because now they've lived for the cause of the gospel. And they see how this stuff works out in real life. And it just they're challenged like never before. And so I want to say, for this next year, for 2014, if there's one thing that you can do, it's to figure out how to get students off the sidelines and into the game. In whatever context you're in, you just got to think about it. You got to be intentional. You got to figure out a plan and figure out ways that they can get off the sidelines and into the game. In fact, that gives me an idea for my next podcast. What I'll do in the next podcast is I will list for you a number of really practical ideas. Ideas that I've used as a youth pastor, ideas that I've used as a parent, ideas that I've seen others use, and try and kind of resource you on this and give you some really practical ideas, things that you can implement right away with your own young people. So that's my challenge to you for 2014. Figure out how to get your students off the sidelines and into the games and light them up for the truth of Christianity, for the truth of Jesus Christ.
STR podcasts are made possible through the generous donations of our listeners. To support STR today, go to str.org and click on Donate in the upper right-hand corner.